Do you have family or friends that vape? 6 people have died after vaping using e-cigarettes in the US. Here in Australia, people have been using it to try to quit smoking, but there's disagreement about whether it's safe and how it should be regulated. I'd love to know your thoughts on vaping. Is it a step in the right direction, or are you concerned about the health risks? Leave a comment on our Facebook page. Matthew Peters is the head of respiratory medicine at a major hospital in New South Wales, and Simon Chapman is a public health expert who studied cessation rates of smoking for decades. Matthew, Simon, welcome to Life Matters.
Hello, Hilary.
Simon, there are lots of different products out there. Can you break down what vaping is and how people are using e-cigarettes?
Well, vaping involves putting liquid nicotine, propylene glycol or vegetable glycerin, and a cornucopia of choices in flavouring. About 8,000 different flavours are available. This liquid is heated up by a coil, which is driven by a battery, and then people inhale the vapour. There's no smoke, it's vapour. People are pulling that kind of mixture down into their lungs if they're a daily vapour, around about 200 times a day, and compared to, for example, cigarette smokers who would pull about 100 times a day, a typical average cigarette smoker would do that. It's highly addictive, and the claims which are being made for it, that it's a very, very successful way of quitting smoking, are not matching the hype, the research that we have on that are not matching the hype about how successful it is. A lot of that talk is being very commercially driven, unfortunately.
And we'll drill down into that a little bit further in a moment. But Simon, is it clear to vapers what's actually in the products? Is it written on the packet? Are they going in with open eyes?
It's not. It's not regulated in any way. It's a sort of a bit of a cowboy industry. I think we can characterise it that way. So people like Matthew and myself, and indeed every other health agency in Australia, with one exception, have argued that the product, if it is to come into Australia, it should be regulated, and that regulation should take place through an agency, perhaps the Therapeutic Goods Administration or a special agency set up to do just that.
And Simon, how popular is it for teenagers, say, in the US and the UK?
The latest information in the UK indicates that in excess of 20% of adolescents are vaping regularly, and regularly is defined as being at least once a month. And of course, many of them are vaping much more than that.
Let's hear about one user's experience. This is John, who recently switched from cigarettes to vaping.
I guess I really just wanted to try it, seeing as I've been smoking I'm 25, but I've been smoking for about 9-10 years now. And in that time, I've tried to quit a few times and gotten to as far as a year, but always end up getting back into it. In the beginning, I kind of tried it as potentially a healthier alternative, but there's a lot of bad press about that. That's not the case. Before I started vaping, I went into just happened to come past a tobacconist that had a bunch of different vapes and probably the best selection I've seen around Melbourne. And I was just asking him a bunch of questions because I had no idea about any of it really. And he let me know that he also sells nicotine or mixes it into the vape juice when you buy it for you. I guess I've kind of found myself vaping more than I was smoking cigarettes because I can just be sitting in my room doing uni work or playing video games or whatever, and I've got it right there next to me on my desk.
So, Matthew, do we know what's actually happening to the lungs when people are inhaling an oil? If we leave the nicotine aside for the moment, just the process of inhaling an oil.
Well, if we start with the volume, there's several mils of this mix that Simon's just described to you. The total volume of the fluid that lines the lungs is around 3 mils. It's tiny. And by the end of a thorough vaping session, there's probably just about as much vaping fluid as there is normal salty water lining your airways. The vaping fluid is oily. and that normal saltwater barrier is very quickly disturbed. And the cases that you alluded to in the States clearly show that where the vaping material goes, lung injury can be caused in certain circumstances.
So the lung disease that we're seeing in the States, the Centre for Disease Control is saying those cases have been linked to vaping, but not necessarily to nicotine. They seem to be linked to THC. Does that mean that vaping itself is possibly not the problem in those deaths?
Far from it. The report, at least from the Wisconsin cases in the New England Journal of Medicine published only last week, said that certainly some of those affected had used cannabis or related products, but not all of them. And we don't know yet about whether that use was sporadic or of an intensity that would, you know, plausibly relate to acute lung injury. And cases of fatty or lipoid pneumonia, such as these, are best characterised as, have been reported for some years, more occasionally. So, you know, it's intriguing. I'm a respiratory physician and people are running around saying it must be a contaminant. But really, from the point of view of lungs, everything in that electronic cigarette is a contaminant.
Simon Chapman, we heard from John earlier, and some GPs and researchers are saying that vaping nicotine can help people stop smoking. Tell us about the evidence for that.
Well, of course, there are plenty of people listening now who either themselves or know somebody who would say, well, you know, I was a smoker. I tried all sorts of ways of quitting, and then I tried vaping, and I'm now no longer smoking. Of course, that's the case. They are out there, and they're very pleased that that's happened to them. But that's not what we call high-level evidence in medicine. When we're looking at high-level evidence, we look at population cohort studies where you get randomly selected people who are using a product under real-world conditions, and you follow those same people up for a long time, so for example 1-2 years, something like that. And where those studies have been published, and most of them come out of the United States, we find that people who are using vaping compared to people who are using other ways of quitting smoking, and also people who are just using cold turkey, which is the way that most people actually quit smoking, vaping does not compare favourably to those other ways. This big series of studies come out of what's called the PATH study over there, and one that I'm thinking of at the moment, it basically shows that people who are vaping are probably held in smoking more than they are tipped out of smoking. And probably the reason for that is that a lot of people who vape, who are smokers, they think, well, look, I used to smoke 20 cigarettes a day and now I smoke 10, but that's probably enough. You know, I'm probably reducing my harm. Now, that sounds perfectly intuitively correct, that if you are going to say halve your consumption of cigarettes, you must be doing something good for your health. But in fact, what we know is that from big other cohort studies around the world, you know, some of them have got like 500,000 subjects in them who've been followed for sort of 10, 12 years, is that it's only when you quit smoking altogether that you actually reduce your harm. There are very, very little harm, benefit is gained by just reducing the amount of cigarettes that you smoke.
An interesting study from New Zealand was released yesterday, and that one found that combining nicotine patches with vaping could be the best way to quit smoking. So it was a randomised controlled trial. They had 1,100 New Zealand smokers who were trying to quit, and they put them in three groups: patches only, patches with nicotine-free e-cigarettes, and patches with nicotine e-cigarettes. And that group, they said, was the most likely to go without smoking for 6 months after treatment. What's your reaction to that? Is that long enough to say, yes, we're getting a benefit here?
Well, I think it's interesting that, you know, words like the best and best way, and they did, you know, double the effectiveness and all that sort of thing. In fact, if you look at the numbers in that study, what happened was that 93% versus 97% of people who were using either vaping with nicotine or vaping without nicotine were still smoking. So the success rates were very, very small, 7% and 4% respectively. respectively. So this is, you know, this is a very, very low bar of effectiveness that we're talking about here. And the, you know, the vape industry and advocate spinners will sort of say, you know, probably emphasize that it was, you know, double the effectiveness of patches. Well, double not much is still not much.
I'm speaking with Simon Chapman from the University of Sydney School of Public Health and Matthew Peters, the Director of Respiratory Medicine at Conrad Hospital and Professor at Macquarie University. Matthew, how long does it take to work out what's happening to someone's lungs when they're vaping? How long does it take to see the damage build up?
So we have got some information on that. Studies conducted in the US have done bronchoscopy, or a little telescope, looked into the lung, looked for inflammation, and we know that e-liquids or vaping liquids, whether or not they contain nicotine, cause acute airway inflammation, and that can be proven by pathology. These same studies also show us some really intriguing data in terms of the effect of these products on proteins. So there is a group of adverse protein changes that occur only with smoking. There are a group of about the same size that occur equally with smoking and vaping. And there's a separate group which don't occur with smoking and only occur with vaping. So as we begin to understand the toxicity of vaping and e-cigarette use more generally, these are very informative studies in man, in vivo. We also know from a study of one product, this was a relatively early stage, I shouldn't say early stage, but it was a well-defined product, not a mix and everything, produced by a major tobacco company, where they studied fit people in their 30s and looked at changes in lung function over 2 years. And there was quite a rapid loss of lung function, much, much more rapid loss of lung function than you would see in smokers who are heading towards emphysema. We don't know if that change is reversible if they happen to stop e-cigarette use, or whether it's a permanent loss of lung function. But again, this has now been demonstrated in man, in vivo, and it's real and it's bad.
Is there such a thing as passive vaping, Matthew? If it's not safe for users, do passers-by need to worry as well?
This is all very contextual. Some of the stuff is exhaled. It acquires water, so it becomes a little bit more, the water content increases, it changes. You know, if you're in the open air, I think Simon would agree with this, it's hard to demonstrate or believe that there's a lot of harm in the open air. However, in closed rooms where one or many vapors have been in those rooms and have studied the air quality in those rooms, it's very clear that there's a residuum of e-cigarette vaping liquids in the air, and that amount of aerosol is potentially harmful.
Simon, we're hearing some feedback that people are thinking that this anxiety about vaping is being fomented by big tobacco because they're seeing people drawn away from cigarettes. What are your thoughts on that?
That's quite an amusing comment, because all the big tobacco companies are now in the vaping business as well as the cigarette business. Take Philip Morris, for example. They've invested, I think it's over $3 billion in one company in the United States called Juul. The rhetoric of these companies is that they want all their smokers to quit smoking and switch over to so-called harm-reduced products. But if you look at what they're doing around the world, they've got their foot flat to the floor in promoting cigarettes as much as they always have. I mean, Philip Morris was the company, you'll recall, which was one of the companies that led the charge against plain packaging in Australia, which was designed to reduce smoking. In 2 years ago, they opened a new cigarette factory in Tanzania. Anyone who's been to Indonesia recently for a holiday will see, you know, Marlboro advertising wallpapering the country over there. So this is really, they're not trying to replace smokers with vapers. They're trying to expand the market and have people both vape and smoke dual use, but also entice people who are not using nicotine at all into using. So this would be people who have maybe smoked in the past, coming back through nostalgia for nicotine, coming back into thinking, well, it mightn't be very harmful, so I may as well give it a go. And as we're seeing in the United States, a lot of kids, and in Canada, a lot of kids taking it up. A study which was published very recently on Canada showed that not only was vaping rising astronomically in Canadian youth, but smoking for the first time in 30 years had started upticking when it had been falling for 30 years in youth over in that country.
And Simon, in the US, health officials are saying, okay, don't buy vaping products off the street. You don't know what's in those oils. And we know that here there's a thriving black market in nicotine oils because you can't legally buy them here without a prescription from your doctor. Wouldn't it be better in Australia to legalise nicotine oil and then have more control over it and less of a black market?
Well, the position of every credible agency and person with, history of expertise in this area in Australia is that we favour a regulated approach to it. And we say, well, these companies who are wanting to market these products, whether they're tobacco companies or whether they're, startups or just vaping companies or perhaps even pharmaceutical companies, if they wanted to come and enter that space, they know what to do. They do what every other therapeutic manufacturer has to do, which is to take their product with the claims for safety and efficacy, in other words, whether it works and whether it's safe, along to the Therapeutic Goods Administration and say, well, here's our data, here's all the trial data that we've got, here's all the sort of toxicological and chemical tests of this stuff. Please assess it. And my understanding is that no one has yet applied to do that in Australia. So, The answer comes back from vaping advocates, well, it's not a therapeutic substance. Well, these people talk out both sides of their mouth on this. They try to walk on both sides of the street. On one hand, they say it's a wonderful product for getting off smoking, which is a therapeutic claim. And then when we say, well, okay, if it's a therapeutic claims you're making, go to the TGA, they will then say, oh, no, but it's not a therapeutic substance. It's a consumer product, whatever that means. If someone turned up and said, look, I've got a cure for asthma, for HIV, for cancer, any diabetes, anything, we would not say, okay, just go and sell it in all, sort of corner shops and 7-Elevens and whatever. We would say, take your claims to the TGA, have them assessed by experts who do that year in and year out and who ensure the safety and quality of medicines, and then we'll work out a way of getting it to consumers in a way that will absolutely minimise the idea that the possibility that it would get to kids.
But Simon, vaping lobby groups also point out that nicotine is freely available in tobacco products and patches. Why is there a difference with the nicotine oil?
Well, because with the case of nicotine patches, those products, of course, when they first came on the market over 20 years ago, were very heavily regulated. You had to get a prescription to use them from doctors, and then you got a renewal of that prescription if you wanted more. And then as the years went by and we had information coming through about the safety and the efficacy of those products, then regulation of them was relaxed to the point now where you can buy some of them in supermarkets even. And that's the sort of normal way that things go with therapeutics. Things which are known to be really benign and helpful are usually much more accessible than those things where there are sort of, significant side effects, for example, or, really need to, for professionals to observe what's happening to the patient who's using them.
And Matthew, I wanted to ask a question that some of our listeners have been texting in and saying they don't use the oils, they use an alcohol base. Is that, in fact, what's in the nicotine-based vaping products, and is it better than the oils?
The great majority, if not all, of the e-liquids are based on a combination of propylene glycol and vegetable glycerin. I'm not aware of something which is purely alcohol-based, but then how would you know? It's completely unregulated space, and people can claim what they like, but put what they like in. I think it is very important that we get on top of things like flavours. You know, we just can't have a situation where products, nicotine containing or non-nicotine, can be added to a range of food additives and flavours. Can be added, you know, burnt at 600 degrees and then deeply inhaled in the lungs. And we know that flavours are important for young people, and we know that they're important for never smokers. So we don't need flavours. One instant regulatory thing that could happen is to ban all flavours, because if you have a legitimate way of getting nicotine, you can add that to vegetable glycerin and propylene glycol. And there would be a minimum product. I'm not saying that product's safe, but there would be a minimum product, and we would exclude all the toxicity associated with the addition of flavours, which only attract kids and never smokers.
Well, if the fierce debate on our Facebook page is anything to go by, this is a very live issue in Australia. Thank you both for joining us on Life Matters. Matthew Peters, Professor of Respiratory Medicine at MQ, Director of Respiratory Medicine at Conrad Hospital, and Simon Chapman, Emeritus Professor of Public Health at the School of Public Health at the University of Sydney.